Thank you. I'd like to begin by thanking the organizers for inviting me. Of course, it's always nice to come back here and talk and also be a part of this very interesting program. I'd also like to thank Matt for introducing the subject of entanglement in quantum field theory. I'm going to talk about a few things that he didn't have time to discuss. He mainly talked about what we call bipartite entanglement in pure states. That is when you divide the Hilbert space into parts A and B. I'm going to be talking about what you do if the system is in a mixed state, which he did mention, because he talked about this quantity called mutual information. But as he mentioned, mutual information tends to be more a measure of the correlations between the two parts of the system rather than the actual quantum entanglement. So we need to have a better measure of quantum entanglement in mixed states, and this is going to be what's called negativity. But in order to introduce the results that we get for this quantity, I'm going to have to go back and explain the part that Matt didn't really explain, how you can get these Renyi entropies in general by looking at the partition function on some branched covering. So he mentioned that again and again, but actually did not explain it. So I'm going to actually take the first part of the talk explaining how we can actually do that. So that will be old stuff, basically. And then in the second part of the talk, I will talk about relatively new stuff that we've done in the last couple of years. I'll talk about results that you can get in 1+1 dimensional conformal field theory, and also a little bit about higher dimensions. So this was work done in the last few years with Pasquale Calabresi and Eric Toni. And our work is ongoing because, as I'll explain at the end, there are quite a few things that we don't understand about it yet. So another challenge. Okay, so this you've all seen before, so I'll go through it quickly. If you want to study bipartite entanglement in a pure state, so you imagine dividing the Hilbert space into HA and HB, you can use the Schmidt decomposition with these coefficients, CJ. If the state is normalized, the sum of the squares is 1, so in one way they can be interpreted as probabilities, and then it's natural to think about the entanglement entropy here, which is going to be maximal if these coefficients are all roughly equal, and minimal if just one of them is there. So that would then be an unentangled state. You can also, as was mentioned, consider this to be the von Neumann entropy of the reduced density matrix of A. And similar but not identical information is contained in the Renyi entropies and what Matt called alpha, I am calling N. It's probably better to think about alpha because you tend to think of N as an integer, But the reason that we usually call it n is that we do our calculations with n a positive integer, as he mentioned, when everything is completely well-defined, and then blithely try to analytically continue to n equals 1. And sometimes that works, and sometimes it doesn't. Of course, if you had a finite dimensional Hilbert space, so all of these things were completely well defined, there would be no problem in this continuation. But not only do we continue in this way, but we tend to take some asymptotic limit, we take some thermodynamic limit or something, and then continue the thermodynamic limit, which is certainly mathematically even more questionable, and the only justification is that the results we get look okay and they agree with the numerical work when you can do that. Okay, so as was mentioned, entropy has all kinds of nice properties, additivity, etc. From the point of view of quantum information theory, it's monotonic under what are called LOCC. That is, if A and B are Alice and Bob, and Alice does local measurements on her part of the Hilbert space and unitary transformations, etc., and classically communicates her results to Bob, and then Bob does unitary transformations, etc., on his part of the Hilbert space, then the entanglement entropy is a entanglement monotone. So from the point of view of numerical calculations, particularly in condensed matter, as Matt was mentioning, it sort of gives the amount of classical information that you need to simulate this quantum state on a digital computer. And the reason that programs like DMRG work so well, at least in one dimension, 1+1 dimensions, is that as Matt mentioned, the entanglement entropy is low. It's much less than it is for a typical state. And that's just to address a question that was at the end of the talk. In higher dimensions, that's also true asymptotically. It's just that we can't do it for large enough systems yet to realize the benefit. I think that's the answer. Anyway, from a condensed matter point of view, again, it gives us a nice basis independent way of identifying and characterizing quantum phase transitions, because as you approach a quantum phase transition, in general, the entanglement entropy grows. Of course, for most phase transitions, there is an order parameter or something like that. You can measure a correlation function. You can see a diverging correlation length, but there are all kinds of more subtle esoteric phase transitions around nowadays, where you don't necessarily know what the order parameter is, if there is one, and this gives a nice way of actually doing that. And finally, in a relativistic quantum field theory, in the entanglement of the vacuum state alone appears to encode all the data of the theory, the spectrum, anomalous dimensions, etc. So I'm briefly and quickly just going to show you how you can compute the Renyi entropies as the partition function on some branch covering of the space-time. So this just goes back to the idea of Feynman, basically, that you can compute the ground state wave function. So this is a picture of space along here, imaginary time going all the way down to minus infinity. I have split space into the two regions, A and B, for example. If you do the path integral over all histories of the fields, A and B, in imaginary time weighted by the Euclidean action here, normalize it correctly with the partition function. Do this path integral conditioned on the assumed values of the fields on A and B. This just gives you, of course, the ground state wave functional. So, and if you want to look at the conjugate to that, you can do the path integral in from plus infinity down to 2 tau equals 0. So if we want the full density matrix, we just have the product of the path integral in the lower half plane times the path integral in the upper half plane. If we do the partial trace over B, say, to get the reduced density matrix rho A, this is going to be equivalent to sewing together those two half planes along B, and the rows and columns of this reduced density matrix are going to be labeled by the values of the fields above and below the cut. And then if we want to compute Renyi entropies, what we do, for example, is to want to compute traces of products of these, of powers of these. So this is illustrated here in the case n equals 3. So we just take 3 copies, and because we want to take a matrix, a product of these density matrices as matrices, we have to sew the bottom of this cut to the top of this one, bottom to the top, and then take the trace at the end. So the result is that the trace of rho A to an integer n is given by the partition function on this conifold with an opening angle to pi n. And that already suggests that there may be a way of analytically continuing to non-integer values of n. So that's one way to actually think about it. Equivalently, if we're thinking about a quantum field theory, I wrote CFT there. It works for a general quantum field theory. We can either think of one copy of the quantum field theory on this conifold, or we can think of n copies with the one n copies on one n copies of the field on one copy of the space identified in this way. It's just whether you want to talk about the world sheet or the target space. So the basic results here, as Matt mentioned, if A is an interval of length R1 minus R2 and B is the rest of the infinite line, so this is a 1 plus 1 dimensional theory, you can think of this you can think of this partition function on this conifold suitably normalized as being a correlation function of these twist operators, which basically sew the sheets, which you can think of as these conical singularities. And the important thing, if you apply, for example, radial quantization or whatever, you can see that these correlation functions will have similar properties to other correlation functions of other local operators. For example, in a conformal field theory, this two-point function is going to decay as a power of R1 minus R2 with some conformal dimension, delta n. And the main result here, which was really first derived in a paper by Halsey et al., is that this delta n has this dependence on n and is proportional to the central charge in 1 plus 1 dimensions. However, that result is almost too simple, too universal, and you can get much more interesting information if you look at the case when A consists of two intervals, A1, A2, B is the rest, and then the trace of rho A to the n can be thought of as the four-point correlation function. And I'll explain in a moment why I denote these twist operators by Pn and Pn inverse. You can just think of that as a notation for the time being. In general, however, we, as Matt mentioned, we spent a lot of time, even for a free field theory or, well, for an uncompactified boson or a free fermion, this is not too hard to actually work out. But for a compactified boson, we can do it for integer n, but then the analytic continuation in n to n equals 1 seems extremely hard, and we haven't been able to actually do that. But there is another way that you can approach this, which was first suggested by Matt, is that you, in the limit where the intervals are kind of short as compared with the distance between them, you can do an OPE, basically, of these twist operators. And it has this form here. And the point is that you can express this product in terms of local operators in the n copies of your conformal field theory. So these will be the usual local operators. And then you can, and also these OPE coefficients are, in principle, all calculable by just doing this for the case of one interval. And then you can stuff this into this correlation function, and you have, and because these are all on different sheets, operators on different sheets are orthogonal, and the whole thing simplifies a lot. So in this limit, you can actually get this expansion, and then term by term, in principle, you can do the analytic continuation in n. Though I have to say, even the first non-trivial term took us a year or three to actually work out how to do that, but we obtained an explicit result. But this point of view already shows you that this thing that Matt called the mutual information, actually, which is the negative of this here, is really more related to correlations between A1 and A2, and not really just their quantum entanglement. So the question is, how can you get some insight, really, into what the quantum entanglement is? Well, one way to think about a twist operator is that it corresponds, if I go back, oh no, I don't really show it here, is that it just corresponds to a permutation operator. So as you go, for example, from here to here, you connect the jth sheet to the j plus, you connect the jth sheet to the jth sheet. As you go across here, the j sheet to the j plus 1 sheet. So when you go around here once, that just corresponds to a cyclic permutation of n objects. So that's why I wrote this as basically Pn inverse, that going around here in a counterclockwise direction corresponds to the inverse perturbation to going inverse permutation to going around here. Okay, so more generally, though, we could consider other permutations, right? We could consider, for example, the four-point function of general perturbations of permutations of n objects. And the only thing that we would want is that the product of those permutations, of those four permutations, was equal to 1. So if you do that, you can get things which, in principle, in a conformal field theory, you could try to compute, and they give us new measures of, in general, the mixed state entanglement between A1 and A2. Now, whether they're useful measures or not remains to be seen. Although I've expressed this in terms of correlations of twist operators in a quantum field theory, you don't have to. You can just think about it as operations on the states of the Hilbert space. And in the quantum information literature in general, these more general permutations, they tend to call them swap operators, are not really considered as far as I know. So in general, it's an interesting problem to work out exactly what information about the entanglement this is actually giving you. But the simplest thing that we can consider is this object here. So remember, before we had P inverse P, P inverse P, and all I've done is to swap over the two P and P and P inverses. And it's fairly easy to convince yourself that this four-point function of these twist operators is related to the trace of the nth power of what's called the partial transpose of the reduced density matrix of A1 union A2, which is defined here. Okay, so its rows and columns of the original one depend upon A1, A2, A1 prime, A2 prime, and we just transpose with respect to the two subspace and not the one subspace. So here's a picture, which is perhaps a little bit hard to read, of what this object is. This is in the case, once again, n equals 3, but the three sheets are stacked one above the other. And you can see that along A1, we have connected the top edge of this slit to the bottom edge here, top to bottom, etc. But doing the partial transpose and taking the trace of the nth power means here on the A2, we connect the bottom to the top and the bottom to the top in that way. So we have a different, apparently a different Riemann surface when we actually do this. So the question is, can we calculate the partition function? But before I show you some results about that, let me just tell you that this gives us a measure of entanglement for mixed states, which was originally proposed by Vidal and Werner. So the point about the partial transpose of rho, even though taking the partial transpose doesn't affect the fact that the trace is 1, it's rho partial transpose is no longer a bona fide density matrix. So it can also have negative eigenvalues. And so one way to check whether it has negative eigenvalues is to form the sum of the modulus of the eigenvalues. Obviously, the sum of the eigenvalues adds up to 1, because the trace is 1. But if there are negative eigenvalues, the sum of the moduli is going to be greater than 1. And so the log of this, which is called the logarithmic negativity, called e here, is going to be positive. And what Vidal and Werner showed was that this has nice quantum information properties. And it's not by no means the first measure of entanglement in mixed states, which quantum informationists have looked at, but most of those are sort of computer science measures where you take some quantity and you maximize it, you know, which is not something that we usually like to do in a quantum field theory. Okay. Well, we do in holography, so okay, I'll maybe. Okay, so how do we compute the negativity, given the fact that we can compute the trace of rho t to the n? Well, we use this nice little trick here, which is that obviously if n is even, the trace of rho t to the n is the sum of the moduli, because n is even. Okay, so if we compute this for n even, and we continue the result to n equals 1, and we don't get 1, but we get something else, then we have negativities. So what we do is to compute for n even, and then pretend that 1 is an even number, which is... Okay, and why does this work? Well, it actually does work, because this is the correlation function of twist operators, which gives this. And now let's suppose we're in the limit when R2 is close to R3. Then we can take the OPE here of these two twist operators, and we're basically going to get a twist operator corresponding to the square of the permutation Pn. And if n is odd, and you square that permutation, you get another permutation, another cyclic permutation in the same conjugacy class as the original one, because you just cycle around. But if n is even, okay, then this decomposes into two cyclic permutations, one on the even numbers, one on the odd numbers. Okay, thank you. And so the point is that this is why n even and n odd are going to be different, and in particular we can use the formula that I wrote down to actually say what is the scaling dimension of this product of two twist operators. It's given by this formula here, which as we now take n to 1, we get minus c over 4. So this actually gives us this result in the limit when the intervals are very close together, which has been confirmed numerically. Now, in the opposite limit, when the two intervals are small and they're far apart, we can actually use that OPE again. And the point about the OPE is it's exactly the same OPE as we use for the mutual information. We just analytically continue one point around another. And so that means that as n goes to 1, every term vanishes because in the mutual information at n equals 1, everything goes away. There's nothing left. We have to take the derivative with respect to n at n equals 1 to actually get something. But here we're not taking a derivative. We're actually taking the limit. So every term in this OPE, when R3, 4, and R1, 2 are small, vanishes. But we can actually do numerical calculations, at least for the uncompactified boson and the Ising model, and that's not what we find. We find non-zero negativity, which is exponentially small in this quantity. So this is e to the minus, okay. So it's 1 over this quantity. So there's an essential singularity in the OPE. So this is an example where there appear to be non-perturbative terms in the OPE. And the only reason that we can see them numerically is all the perturbative terms go away. So this should be a warning for us, perhaps, in a conformal field theory, that there could be non-perturbative terms which are there. Of course, perhaps this is because we're considering slightly non-local operators, non-perturbative. I use the word non-perturbative because it's like an instanton, but it's not an instanton, right? So non-perturbative in this small quantity. Okay, so this is 1 over a small quantity, so all the derivatives vanish. There's an essential singularity in the OPE. In the cross ratio, yeah. So it's not in a coupling constant. So I shouldn't have used the word non-perturbative, but non-analytic, essential singularities. I think someone had a question back there, which I could. I don't know the answer to that. Okay, so this is just our numerical proof. Why is this ratio, which is not quite what I said. So y goes to 1 is when the intervals are close. We have nice numerical agreement with our short distance expansion here, which fails out here. This is the essential singularity here. All the derivatives vanish there, but it's not zero. So some other results briefly. In general, this is given by the partition function on some Riemann surface. If you do it for n equals 2, it doesn't make any difference, and that's known to be related to the partition function on the torus, which, of course, you know. Interestingly, if you take combinations like this of both rho and rho t and other powers, you get, in general, partition functions on non-orientable surfaces. Okay. In higher dimensions, you can make the same kind of argument. If you have A1 and A2 next to each other, then the negativity, sorry, this should be E, is proportional to the area of the common boundary between A1 and A2. It would be interesting, of course, this is an area law sort of result, and it would be interesting to know in certain dimensions whether there might be universal corrections, and whether, if you now take these regions far apart, whether you get these what I called non-perturbative corrections. But I don't know. So just to summarize, negativity is a measure of entanglement in mixed states, which is equivalent to looking at tripartite and entanglement, because you can always think of a mixed state as a pure state where you've traced out one of the regions. It's computable in some quantum field theories, but remains somewhat mysterious. As far as I know, it doesn't appear to have a simple holographic interpretation. So I'll end with a quote, which I've always wanted to include in a talk. If anybody knows where this comes from, without looking it up on your iPhone, I'll be impressed. You have to be of a certain age. Okay, thank you very much.
So you for this negativity, you gave a Hilbert space interpretation of this correlation function of twists. But for general permutations, do you have a Hilbert space?
Yeah, you can always write them in terms of traces of products of partial transposes and this kind of stuff.
I see.
Yeah. You can always do that. So it gives you more information about the density matrix. The question is what information, and that's...
And are those calculable? Have you calculated?
They are as calculable as these things are, yeah.
I see.
Oh, just so that you don't have an extra permutation at infinity, so that you can apply periodic boundary conditions on each sheet, so the sheets decouple. But you wouldn't have to do that, but then there will be some extra permutation at infinity. That's all.
Well, I have the mic, so I'll ask you a question. How confident are you of this numerical appearance of this non-analyticity? Is it possible that it could go away?
Well, this was originally found in a couple of papers where I have to say they didn't do it all that carefully. I think that we did it carefully. And I don't think... I mean, one of the interesting things is it is subtle, right? So in order to do the numerical calculation, you actually have to put this field on a lattice because, as you said, these things are only in the end defined on a lattice. If in these intervals you only have a finite number of lattice spacings, it's easy to convince yourself that a finite distance apart, the negativity vanishes identically. And that's just because when you because in that case, before you take the partial transpose, you only have a finite number of eigenvalues in the reduced density matrix, and they're all positive. And taking the partial transpose when they're a long way apart only shifts those a little bit, so they can't go negative. So this negativity is coming from the eigenvalues, which are very, very small, which is not the ones that we usually look at. We usually look at the largest eigenvalues and so on. So there is something very subtle going on here. But numerically, we're confident. Yes, am I supposed to be dealing?
You can pick. I'll just Tom, you have your hand.
Is the non-perturbative term in the replica partition function, or is this only when you take n to 1?
I believe it's there all the time, but you can't see it.
So in the replica partition function, if we think of this as a correlator in the orbifold theory, this is a correlator of local fields in a...
Of twist operators.
No, in the orbifold theory, not in the CFT of the n, but in the orbifold.
For integer n, I don't believe that they're there for integer n. Is that what you mean?
Yes, for integer n greater than 1.
But the problem is that, no, I don't think they are there. Right. Correct, yes. Okay. We can write the expressions down and they're not there then, yes. And I should also say that for integer n, we have more explicit expressions, and they agree with our numerics in that case. So that partly answers Matt's question. So that comes about because these, for non-integer n, this is some weird operator. But it could happen because there can be an infinite number of Virasoro primers there. This is not an operator in a minimal, you know, this is not a Katz operator.
Yeah. I have two small questions. One is, the C in the exponent, is it universal?
Oh, no, no.
Okay.
No. Well, I don't know, because we did the calculation in one model.
Okay.
No. And it is different for icing and a free field, but that's all I know.
I see. And
And by the way, we're not even sure it's really an exponential or an exponential of a power. We can't distinguish those.
I see. And the other thing I was going to ask was, one way to get mixed state is to put the system at a finite temperature.
Yes.
So what does it look like if you do it? There's some general argument you can just...
Right. So what happens numerically is, as soon as you put on a finite temperature, the negativity goes away very rapidly. Mm-hmm. And this is to do with the fact that it really is measuring the quantum entanglement rather than the correlations. The mutual information would still be there. But we don't know. One of our unsolved problems, apart from this exponential, is to do this calculation at finite temperature. We don't know how. Well, we can do it numerically again, but that's all.
Does your non-perturbative effect say anything about the numbers of operators contributing in the OPE for large values of delta? The opposite limit to the short distance one. But.
Well, I don't know about numbers, but it would say it would give you something about the growth of the operators, the growth of the OPE coefficients. Yeah, but I haven't worked that out. Yeah. It's diverging, yes. The OPE has an essential singularity at the value, you know. Okay, not the it could come about because the OPE coefficients are growing and growing, right?
But at each end, it's convergent.
Sorry?
At each end.
At each integer n, it seems to be convergent, right. So
it's not really. It's a question of continuing.
Yeah, well, yes, yes, you could say that. Okay. So, does anybody know where this quote comes from? Who? No? Tim? Well done. Bob Dylan, yeah. Okay.
Well, let's thank John again then. Thank you.